live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Yeah, it's Raider Nation Radio on a Friday. It's the morning tailgate. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor here on Raider Nation Radio. Hit us up on the text line, 702-365-9200. The keyword of the day is Speedo. Text it in to 702-365-9200 for your chance to qualify for the four-day, three-night excursion to Liverpool, England. It's all brought to you by Planet Nissan on our summer of fun. Vinny and Clay will take more calls into the second hour, but first it's time to talk with Grillin McMillan. Longtime DB in the NFL, Mark McMillan joins us, shutdown DB with the Eagles and the Chiefs. We try to keep that quiet. All Madden team and a celebrity chef on Next Level Chef on Fox with Gordon Ramsay and GrillinMcMillan.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. And I know you are back in Philly. It's great to be back where it all began for you. But can you also take us back? Because we were thinking about the Raiders secondary and those two young corners that were drafted, those two rookies. When you were 22 years old, you were a rookie DB in Philadelphia, learning under Bud Carson as your defensive coordinator. What were those early lessons that you learned about how to handle all the responsibilities a cornerback needs?
First off, I was told not to listen to WIP, which is a famous radio station here, because if you have a bad practice or a bad game, they will murder you on the radio. That was the first thing the guys told me. You know, I remember Reggie White and, you know, Steph Jordan, all those guys, like, man, whatever you do, don't listen to that station, because if you do anything wrong, they will run you out of this city. So that was lesson number one, man. You got to get used to the media here in Philly. But learning under Bud Carson, the creator of the steel curtain way back in the day, yeah. Like I was telling somebody yesterday, I couldn't ask for a better situation to be put in, to be around those defensive backs such as Eric Allen, Wes Hopkins, Andre Waters, you know, Rich Miano. There was a lot of really good defensive backs on that team mm-hmm. that I got a chance to learn from. And obviously having Jerome Brown, Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, and all those guys in front definitely helped out with my job as well.
I can just imagine and picture Mark McMillan driving around to practice and listening to the radio station that you just talked about and them going out to Guido in South Philly to talk about the defensive backs. Oh, what's going on with the defensive backs? So sometimes, Mark, you just got to consider the source in those situations. Although Philadelphia sports radio is quite colorful when it comes to hearing from Vinny from South Philly and all the great Italian sports nuts that are out there, and they are certainly sports nuts. So you are in Philadelphia. I'm obviously Italian. I love Italian food in Philadelphia. It's different than New York and Chicago. I know you do your Grillin McMillan thing, and you are a master at all that. But when you do get to Philly, do you give yourself a chance to go get some good Italian food or a Philly cheesesteak sandwich?
I've had like four cheesesteaks already since I've been here. nice. Some of the delis, some of the smaller places, you know, everybody knows about Gino's and Pat's and, mm-hmm. and Tony Luke's. You know, Chickens and Pete's have a good cheesesteak. But some of the small schools in South Philly that, you know, you want to get in and get out before, you know, you don't want to stay in there too long.
Right.
It's a little dangerous down there, but those are the best places that have the hoagies and the cheesesteak. So I'm 5 in, and then I'm doing a cooking thing tonight. So I'll probably have about 7 or 8 cheesesteaks by the time I get back to Las Vegas.
I love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have a barbecue event tonight, and you also are running your Camp 29 over the weekend. We'll get to that in just a second. But if you are actually doing a barbecue event, how do you barbecue it up at a brewery to make it Philly style? What do you got planned for this tonight's excursion?
I'm excited, man. I've been working with Trogues Brewery for a while. They're out there in Hershey, Pennsylvania, across the street from the Hershey's Chocolate Factory.
Right.
So as soon as you arrive in Hershey, you just smell chocolate. Mm. So I'm excited to get out there, man. They've been a big supporter of me when I was here, as well as after my career. So we got the Grillin McMillan barbecue platter tonight. So we'll have sausages. We'll have brisket macaroni and cheese. We'll have ribs. We'll have burgers. So, you know, I'm sure they're going to have some cheesesteaks out there. It's Philly, man. They're always going to have some cheesesteaks somewhere. So we're going to be doing that from 4 to 8 tonight with some of the proceeds going back to my lift program for kids that's been harassed and bullied. So we're going to be eating. They're going to break out some new beer. I'm just so excited right now. They say, what time are you going to come? It starts at 4. I said, I'll be there at 1.
Yeah. I'll be there at one to try the chocolate stout. I'd be there for you, yeah, for sure.
So draw us a picture here. How many barbecues are we talking about? When you do an undertaking like this, and I know you go all out, whether it's in your backyard, with a group of people coming over, or one of these types of events. Draw us a picture on what this all looks like.
It's going to be packed today. Today is Friday. They said this is one of the most busiest days that they have at the end of the week. We'll get probably 800 to 900 people that'll come across that will come through those doors. I got cases of barbecue sauce, cases of spices here. They're going to be selling the spices and the barbecue sauce. So I'm excited, man. It's going to be smoke. It's going to be beer. It's going to be a fantastic event. And the Eagle fans are so excited for this, man. I am pumped up, man. I am geeked up, Vinny. I wish you was here to hang out with your boy, man. Have a nice cold one and a cheeseburger.
I would love that. I would love it, Mark.
It's so good. Mark McMillan here with us on Raider Nation Radio. Go online, grillinmcmillan.com, at MarkMcMillan29 on X. So back to the cornerback. When you were in your second year, you now became a reliable starter. So they made you, you earned your spot in that role. Now this is a team coming off of two playoff wins, and you are now thrust into this role. You had a fantastic season, a handful of interceptions, a shutdown corner. What was that leap for you? What did you need to learn to become that starter, become that reliable guy in the defensive secondary?
To be disciplined. I came out of Alabama thinking my stuff didn't stink. You know, I was on my high horse, but I was humbled because I didn't get drafted to the 10th round. I was one of the last picks for the Philadelphia Eagles. So that was a humbling experience. But then just going through training camp, going against different receivers, Fred Barnett, Urban Fryer, you know, I had a chance to play with him as well. But just getting humbled and, you know, getting beat up in practice, you know, physically, mentally. And then over the time, I just, you know, I always give Eric Allen the praise, man, because he just sat me down, showed me some of the work that he was doing. He had everything on paper. His notes were on point, so he knew every receiver in the league, every route they ever ran. Ooh. So I just started picking up on those little things, taking film home, and just taking the job seriously, not hanging out, not going out. And I wasn't friends with anybody. Back then, we wasn't friends with anybody. If you was a Philadelphia Eagle, that was it. We didn't like the Cowboys, the Redskins. Heck, we didn't like our parents at some time, man. We were just a gritty bunch of guys. So just being disciplined enough, and then when I got my opportunity to play with 49ers, I think I got in like the third quarter, and obviously Jerry Rice was still out there. He had scored like two touchdowns already, broke a record. They're carrying him off on his field, and you know, I just hear him saying, hey, this is that rookie everybody was talking about. He's like, this is about to be even easier. So, you know, that just I can't say what I said to him on the radio, but you know, just little stuff like that, man. I just had to learn and, go through the tough times, and it paid off for me.
You talk about those learning experiences and the growing pains. I think we saw that firsthand last year with Jakorian Bennett. But you've seen it. You've personally lived it, going through growing pains and then becoming the player that you eventually became. So I don't think it's time to write Jakorian Bennett off whatsoever, especially going into year two, as early as it is in his program. What are your expectations for Jakorian, especially knowing that, you know, everyone that you talk to, Jakorian wants it, and he is a student of the game, and he's got the physical skills without question. Do you expect him to get back to where he was and grow from you know, his higher points of last year?
Yeah, you guys said the coaching changes, the culture around the team, you know, that all affects the player too. And he was a young guy. He really didn't have any leadership on the back end. He was injured a little bit. So, you know, when you go through that stuff as an NFL player, so many highs and so many lows that go through your mind. And I saw him last year in camp, and I was like, wow, this kid is really impressive. So, you know, it takes time. You know, I know when these guys get drafted, you know, second, third, first round, we want to put so much pressure on them to be the player that they were in college and come into the NFL and do it. You know, you got guys that's been there 7, 8 years that's got a gang of experience. So I'm looking for him to turn the corner, block out all the noise, and, another year under his belt. People don't understand, man, playing corner in the National Football League, especially nowadays, with the way the game is played, is extremely hard for defensive backs because you really can't be physical at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm.
Well, with a guy like Nate Hobbs, for example, you know, 2021 draft pick, fifth round, he is now somebody that is consistently relied upon because he's always in the mix. Now, as his contract is coming up, he is not unlike Trayvon Merrick and Malcolm Kuntz. How important is it for the Raiders to now extend Nate Hobbs? And what have you seen in his game that has matured to this next level?
Well, Nate Hobbs is healthy. He's one of the best inside corners in the game. He's physical. He'll go in. He'll blitz. He's a really good tackler. He's played on the outside as well. So it's real. It's rare that you can get a guy that can play inside and outside. But I'm sure Patrick Graham has a lot of good things that he can put in for Nate Hobbs because he knows he can put him around the line of scrimmage and, you know, force as well and use the corners on the outside to lock guys down. This is a very important year for Nate Hobbs, man. When you know your last year is up, I think I had one of my best years in my third year in Philly because I knew my contract was up. So,
okay.
Guys know when that contract is up in your last year, you really got to get after it. And healthy Nate Hobbs is a big plus for the Raiders.
He is, without question. And then when Jack Jones, came onto the scene, I think it changed everything in the Raiders' secondary, yep. Especially at the cornerback position. He's a player, Mark, that I have that I believe has a chance to be great, not just good but great. But I think that there's some things that he still needs to iron out in terms of the not necessarily the maturity, but being locked in, play out, rep in, rep out, everything that is required to be a great professional football player. But if he gets to that point where the lock-in and the buy-in and the focus is where it needs to be, how good can he possibly be?
He could be one of the best. Like I said, he could be one of the best inside corners in the game. I think he fails well. I think he does better inside because he's a physical guy and he's reliable. When he's hurt, you can see the defense take a step back. But when he's healthy and in the game and engaged and, just talking to Nate Hobbs, man, he wants it. You know, he has that dog mentality. He's not going to back down for anybody, and you have to love that. And then you bring over Jock Jones, and you implement him into the program, and just the whole culture of the defense. I think guys really picked it up. They rallied behind Pierce, and I guarantee you guys are looking for the Raiders defense to be much improved and kind of be even better than they was towards the end of the season. And Nate Hobbs is going to be a big key for that process for those guys to move forward.
What do you think the ceiling is for Jack?
Jack, man, he even coming out of Long Beach, being in college, he's always been a guy with unbelievable talent. The sky, the ceiling is so high for this young man. Hopefully he locks in and buys into what they have, Coach Graham has for these guys, and, just leave the street stuff, leave those guys behind. Just focus on your teammates, lock in, and if you really want to win and do something special, I think Jock Jones can be one of the top corners in the league. He's lanky. He takes chances. He makes big plays. And, with Graham's defense, those are the things that he's going to be looking for, these guys to be able to play man on the outside. When you got Wilkinson and you got Max coming out off the corner, it makes those guys' job a lot easier. And if they don't realize that, you don't have to cover as long as when Reggie White was on our side. I was like, man, I don't have to cover for maybe a second, maybe a half a second.
We're speaking with Mark McMillan, grillinmcmillan.com, also with Camp 29. We'll talk about that in just a second. We outlined how there were a couple opponents on the Raiders' schedule that have holes in their wide receiver group, one of them being the Chargers. First game of the year, week one. How can the Raiders' secondary take advantage of a new offensive regime and also wide receivers that aren't there anymore? Mike Williams is not there, Keenan Allen, and it'll be Ladd McConkey, a rookie, and guys like Jalen Guyton that Justin Herbert's going to go to. What can the secondary do to take advantage of that?
Be physical with those guys. Harbaugh's going to want to run the ball. So you've got to bow your neck, lock up on the outside, and then, just smack these guys in the mouth. You've got to come off the ball and set the tempo early. You want to get some wins under your belt. Everybody knows Kansas City is the cream of the crop still, and everybody's chasing those guys. But the Raiders have beat those guys. They beat the Chiefs this year in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So they know they have a good nucleus that they can knock off the champs. But they got to buy into it and, put all the hype away from last year and just focus on what they can do this year. Because last year was last year. There's a lot of stuff going on. So if they come out this year, smoking on guns. You know, old khaki pants is going to be ready over there.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. And at the same time, we talk about Camp 29 and all the great work that you have done throughout your life, helping younger student athletes go a little further. And that includes in all sports, but especially in football. For Camp 29, as will be taking place this weekend in Philadelphia, what's it like for you to get back and always connect with younger players? Because each and every year, you see some of the young faces that you help coach, whether it was from the blue-gray showcases and blue-gray camps to now Camp 29 your own, and they make it to the next level, into college and into the NFL.
It's exciting to see. And obviously, you know, I have a strong tie here in Pennsylvania. I want to continue to do this and continue to raise the bar. Yeah. You know, I know a lot of kids, when they see me come out to the camp, they're shocked at how tall I am really not. You know, they're like, wow, you're really like 5'7". And I'm like, hey, you know, anything can be done. You know, if you put your work to it, you put your mind to it, surround yourself with good, positive people. Watch what you're posting on social media, because these college coaches, they have interns who watch your social media. So some of these coaches are looking at ways to not recruit you because they want to have good, positive people come through their program. And that's something I tell these kids, man, once you push in on social media, you can't get it back. So seeing some of these guys being able to play on Saturdays and Sundays is a big it's almost like eating a cheesesteak, Vinny, man. I tell these kids, I don't want anything from them. I just like to see these kids get on TV. And, you know, when I go to the games, you know, I always like to see people are always like, why are you on the opposing team sideline? So a lot of the kids that I've coached are all on the opposing team. So I just like to go over there and just see them, man, and shake their hands and get a picture with them, get a selfie.
Yeah.
And it's just important to be able to see that, man, to see these kids being successful and seeing their parents' faces smile, and when they see me like 15 years later, like, wow, he's still doing what he did for my son years ago. So that's a reward, man. I just want to use my platform to the best that I can. And this Saturday, I'll be hosting my camp. We moved to Clipper Magazine Stadium, so it's a minor league stadium. Oh, cool. So we moved to a bigger stadium in Lancaster, so I'm excited about that. And I'll be throwing out the first pitch on Tuesday night at the baseball game. So I'm working on my fastball too,
yeah,
man. You know, if you throw it in the dirt, man, I might get booed.
Yeah, you know, because Lancaster, they have a high standard over there. You know, they don't want to lose to the Iron Pigs of Lehigh. Hey, but at the same time, do you ever get requests to teach people in your technique of how to tackle and hit? Because when you played the game, you were the hardest hitter in the game. That's why you won the All Madden Award. John Madden lost his mind when he saw the ferocious hits you used to lay on people.
I didn't have a choice, man. When you're in that defense, man, the film didn't lie. And, you know, if you made a bad play, Bud Carson had the red dot, the little red pin, and he will point you out. And, you know, what last thing you want to do is upset 10 other guys who have been breaking their necks to get these opponents down. So parents, you know, nowadays it's a different ball game. And even when I go to training camp and see you guys out there now, it's like there's no contact. You know, it's like they're hitting plastic bags, they're hitting dummies, and then when you get to the game, you got to go full speed and hit a live human. And that's part of some of the reasons these guys get hurt as well, because you can't really tackle or have physical contact in practice nowadays.
Well, thank you, Mark, for coming in on a busy week for you. Thank you so much for sharing that insight. We really appreciate it. We love your work with Camp 29 and up at grillandmcmillan.com. We wish you the best of luck this weekend and a safe travel back home here in Las Vegas.
All right, I appreciate it. You know I'm going to take a picture with a nice cheesesteak or a rib in my mouth with a nice, cold, refreshing beer from Trogues, baby.
I want to see it live vicariously through you, Mark.
All right, appreciate you guys always having me on, man.
All right, thank you. Mark McMillan 29. Check that out, at Mark McMillan 29 on X. And what a great time to be out there, to be honest with you. Could you imagine on a Friday night at a brew pub with the Trobe Brewery there with the chocolate stout and all that, and he's
somewhere
just like,
on the East Coast, man.
Somewhere on the East Coast on a Friday night, everyone in the city out there piling in. That's awesome. But what'd you think about the especially when he said, I worked alongside Eric Allen, and he showed me his notes that he had, detailed notes on every route that every wide receiver ran in the league. I wonder what if there's a process like that now for the Raiders secondary, guys like Nate Hobbs, to also have that kind of information, and you know, Patrick Graham being able to utilize other guys like that. I wonder what that's like for these young corners now to maybe have that kind of information at their ready.
Yeah, and everything now is at your fingertips. You get so much information, and the team does a great job of you know, cutting up your opponent, and so that you know what to expect and what to see, what to key on, what to focus on. I remember John Johnson; he was a safety for the LA Rams. You know, you get in on Wednesday. Well, first of all, you could just hit up your tech people Sunday night after a game, after your game, to say, I this is what I need on who we're playing, and they'll whip it up for you. They'll have it ready for you on Monday. That's what they do. And so he was studying this opponent that was coming up, and he told me before the game, we were talking, and he's like, he goes, this is going to take all my discipline in this game. Why? You know, and he goes, there's something that they do that I know, and I'm going to have to fight myself from overreacting to it too early to let them know that I know.
For sure, because they're going to key on that tendency.
Yeah, so he goes, but he totally picked up on a they had totally picked up on a give or just a you know an indication that the other team gives when they're getting ready to do something. He goes, so I'm going to have to really just fight myself not to start running to the line of scrimmage too early. To trigger that I know. And he made a couple of plays on that. And I remember the next week talking to him about it. He's like, yeah, your eyes get super big. And it's all because of film work. He picked it up on film work by studying the film and understanding, oh my gosh, this is exactly what they do when they're in this formation and blah, blah, blah. There were some other layers to it. But sometimes, like he said, you have to fight yourself not to give it up to them that you know exactly what's coming. But he was able to make, you know, some plays on it. So it's on you as a player, and I'm sure, you know, the Raiders players do a really good job of film work. I'm sure Jack Jones is getting better at that and better at that and, you know, being more diligent about it. Because as Mark said, coming out of Alabama for him, he just thought, okay, this is going to be, you know, I'm Mark McMillan from the University of Alabama. You know, I got this, even as a 10th round pick. And then you get to the NFL and you realize everybody is great. Everybody's the best player that you played against, basically, in college, if not better. And yes. and so you're going to have to make that adjustment. And part of it is physical, but a lot of it is also work habits and studying and understanding what you're up against on any given week. So yeah, to your question, I fully expect Nate and, you know, the Brandon Faison and Jack Jones and, you know, led by the coaches as well, to be just diving into the film, because that is a huge component going into any kind of a game that you're playing.
And I also love what he said about, you know, Hobbs, when healthy, that's the best inside corner in the game. And it's funny when you also think and you read about how other teams will some players kind of get slighted over in these off-season reports of, like, I always see this thing about, well, the Raiders, they still don't have a cornerback one. But I don't think the rest of the league, as far as writers are concerned, believe in what Jack Jones could be and what Jack Jones currently showed you in the 2023 season.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, unless you were here and watching it as we were, it was only four games. So, you know, I think the bigger question about the Raiders isn't necessarily a cornerback one, because I think I think generally speaking, people understand that Jack and Nate are pretty good. It's really who's going to start alongside them. That is the big issue, because is it going to be Ja'Corian Bennett? Is it Cameron Richardson? Is it Brandon Faison? Do they have to go outside the building to go find that guy? I think there's general consensus that they have two really good starters. Who's that third starter, and what's the rotation going to look behind all three of those starters?
It's Raider Nation Radio here on Friday. Keep your thoughts coming at 702-365-9200. Also, our word for the day is Speedo. You text the word Speedo in, you qualify for that awesome trip, 4 days, 3 nights in Liverpool, England, or a $3,000 payout. It's up to you. It's our summer of fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan.
Clay, did you take your hand off the panic button now that the Aces won, got back on the winning side of things?
It was getting palpable. Yeah, I was getting a little sweaty palms.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I don't know why. I guess you know, you just look at that team and getting Chelsea Gray back and the pedigree, they're going to, when the bell really rings for them, I think they're going to respond.
What a return. Easily scores 30 points.
Yeah,
a return.
She's so good. She's so good.
So amazing.
Which brings us to Dos Catas Tequila. You know, they're the official tequila of our Las Vegas Aces here in Las Vegas, the two-time defending champions. And not only can you get Dos Catas at the building, you know, when you go to Aces games, but before and after Aces game, and this goes for Raiders games as well, at the Mandalay Bay. There's the Border Grill. It's right across the street from Allegiant Stadium, and it's where Mandalay Bay is, where the arena there is, where the Aces play. Well, go check out the Border Grill before and after games, because they are partners now with Dos Catas Tequila as well. So you can enjoy some Dos Catas Tequila, whether it's before or after the game. And obviously heading into the arena to go watch the Aces play and then celebrating a victory after the Aces win. So go check out Border Grill at Mandalay Bay for your Dos Catas Tequila. And if you want to just go shop for some Dos Catas Tequila, Lee's Liquor here in Las Vegas, and also Total Wine, both have all of Dos Catas Tequila's great labels. And if you're not in Las Vegas, don't worry. DosCatasSpirits.com is where you go. DosCatasSpirits.com. You can order it online, get it shipped wherever you are at DosCatasSpirits.com.
Chiefs take over on their own 25. Kelce out of the gun, rolls out to his right, tries to find his receiver. Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown! Back-to-back plays for the defense with touchdowns, and the Raiders defense has completely flipped this game in Kansas City.
It's Raider Nation Radio. Thanks for being with us. R&R 920 AM on X. We'll take your thoughts up on the text line, 702-365-9200. Don't forget the keyword of the day, Speedo. Text that in, and you qualify for the grand prize of this week's Summer of Fun 4-day, 3-night trip over to Liverpool, England. On the way back, Jack Jones pick sixes from the season. Raider Nation Radio, Raiders Radio Network with the call. We see Dame in Oakland. 4 games with 2 pick sixes is crazy. If someone doubts the Jacka, they're just hating. I think it's just he's one of the great unknowns, I think, in the league. Nobody really knows what Jack Jones and what a full year can be, but that was a surprising twist in his career path, is that when he came to the Raiders, what Patrick Graham was able to get out of him was really exceptional. But this was all inside Jack Jones, because he showed each and every week that there was something special in his game. I think that, for this time of the year, if he goes unwarranted or underrated, all the better for the Raiders, really.
Yeah, the day that the Patriots released him, and that felt like a mutual thing, it just wasn't working for him in New England. There's just not good fits sometimes. The day that became official, I never forget, my son, I was at the media room in Henderson. My son texted me, he's like, "You think the Raiders would be interested?" And I was like, "So really, that makes so much sense right there." Because yeah, Jack had a good rookie year. He was a 5-star recruit. Everyone that knows football, especially out here on the West Coast, understands who Jack Jones is. This guy is a tremendous athlete. There's things that he's able to do physically that human beings just aren't necessarily able to do. So it was a coup for the Raiders to be able to bring him in at a massive position of need, a young player that has the potential to be a lockdown cornerback in this league, and somebody that takes chances and has a huge upside. So credit Noah for seeing that before it actually happened. And lo and behold, the Raiders, because of where they were record wise, they had an early crack at him in the waiver wire process. And it fit like a glove. He was coming to the perfect place for him. His high school coach, his college coach was here. Marvin Lewis was now on the scene. He was his defensive coordinator at Arizona State. These are, coaches that knew Jack Jones and understood the full picture of Jack Jones. They went to the team and said, "Hey, look, he's going to need our support. He's going to need our love. He's going to need, a lot of different things, a support system." And they welcomed him with open arms, from the coaching staff to the players in the locker room. And he responded. So this guy has a high, high ceiling and a high upside. It's on him to remain and toe that line, because if he does, he's got a chance to be a great player. By the way, did you see this thing from Seth Walder over at ESPN? The whole he graded everybody's offseason, and he gave the Raiders a failing grade.
A failing grade.
To quote his story, which is, this is, everybody has an opinion, so I'm just going to leave it at that. The biggest failure was not trading Davante Adams, which is almost inexcusable in the Raiders' current state, Walder wrote. The 31-year-old wide receiver has 1 cheap year left on his contract, $17.5 million this year, and Las Vegas needed to cash in for draft capital now. Instead, it's running out the clock on a deep an asset that's, you know, being lowered in value. Likewise, the Raiders ought to have traded down and acquired future assets that could have been used on or support a future quarterback. Elsewhere, the Raiders spent a ton on defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, which I criticized at the time as an overpay. He helps their defense.
What?
But I don't know if he's worth the price paid. First of all, Devontae doesn't want to go anywhere. He loves it here in Las Vegas. He loves being a part of the Raiders. You don't take your best player, your best offensive player, when you need all of the weapons that you possibly can have to support a young quarterback, and you know, whoever that quarterback ends up being. Guys like Devontae Adams and Michael Mayer and Jacoby Meyer and Trey Tucker and Brock Bowers are going to be the Zamir White are going to be the engine that creates whatever offense the Raiders are going to be able to muster up. And there's a chance for it to be pretty good if the quarterback is decent. You don't just get rid of one of your best player. You just don't do that. And then on top of that, you're talking about a great defense. So you have this really good defense. You've got this really good roster that you're trying to maximize right now. This isn't a rebuild. Nobody's looking at this as a tear it down and rebuild it back up. You're trying to take steps forward, and I think a great step forward for the Raiders is going to be, you know, trying to win 10 games and get into the playoffs. I think that would be a great achievement for the Raiders this year. Whatever happens in the playoffs happens. No one's talking about them as a Super Bowl, but this is an organization that needs to start laying a winning foundation. And I don't know how you go about doing that by trading one of your best players right now. It just doesn't make sense.
Think about what it took for you to acquire him. You had to give up a first round and a second round pick, and all of a sudden after 2 years, let's get some more. That doesn't make any sense. What kind of that'd be just insane to do, especially for a guy who's not looking to leave anytime soon.
I mean, if there were major holes on the defensive side of the ball and on offense where you're just where you're looking at your landscape and saying, in terms of just being able to compete and maybe even compete for a playoff, we're miles and miles away. Yes, then in that kind of a situation, it would make sense to trade a player like Devontae Adams right now to try to get some, assets for the present and the future to help your rebuild. But nobody's looking at this as a rebuild. They're, quite honestly, a quarterback away, and that quarterback could be Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew this year. Mm-hmm. But they're a quarterback away from, I think, doing pretty special things. So I don't think you tear it down, not when you're trying to build a winning culture. And the whole thing with Christian Wilkins, I don't care how much it cost them to bring him in. You needed to go get a stud defensive tackle to pair with a absolute stud in Max Crosby on the interior to lift this defensive line from good, which it really was last year. It was good last year, to potentially exceptional, because that's going to be the strength of your defense, and everything's going to flow from that defensive line, and there's really good players behind that defensive line as well. So not going out there and signing the best defensive tackle in the league to add to a top 10 defense already, of course you do that. He was, when I did my off-season game plan and everything like that, Christian Wilkins was at the top of the list. I'm not surprised, but the fact that it came to fruition is a great thing for the Raiders and a great thing for Raider Nation. And to sit there and say that was a bad signing because you thought it would cost too much, it's ridiculous to me.
You go and get the best players that you can, and obviously, whatever the price is, it's not like it came out of your pocket.
Okay? Right.
Go and make that happen, and this is how you make your best assets greater. But at the same time, for somebody like Devontae, it's beyond just what he can do on the field. It's the little stuff. What about the comments he made following minicamp where he talked about, all right, yeah, there's ways to handle frustrations on the offense, but it's not something that you start, panicking about.
The frustration comes in midseason when we haven't made the progress that we need. At this point, you're not a very mature or experienced football player if you're getting frustrated in mandatory minicamp. Obviously I get frustrated every play if it doesn't work, like to a certain degree, but it's not frustration where you're losing hope in your teammates or yourself or the potential of what you can do as a team. It's more like, I got a standard, and I definitely everybody in this circle knows that I have a very high standard for myself. So, if I run a go route and the ball's overthrown, I'm gonna be, probably cussing on the sideline for a second, just more upset that I didn't get to complete that, because a lot of what goes into me being as confident as I am on Sundays is having made that play 100 times and knowing what that feels like. So then in the game, is, you know, people come up and they say, it just looks so easy. I'm like, well, I don't have to elevate for the game. I come in to practice with the same mentality and same intensity that I would have, you know, in a game. And in that way, when I get those opportunities, it's kind of like, yeah, we just got to keep working and definitely not getting frustrated to the point where I'm thinking it's not going to work out. But, you know, we're going to keep our standard. You got to have realistic expectations at this point, but always keep your standard where it's supposed to be.
When your best players are your hardest workers, that kind of leadership has to be cherished and truly appreciated within the lockers, within the storied halls of Raiders HQ. And it is. They prize that, and you can't go further with a young team, especially at quarterback, try to find your way without that kind of veteran leadership. This is a prized asset you just don't trade away just because it doesn't match up to your fantasy matchup expectations and what you could probably get with him on the open market. Of course, every team wants that.
Well, the other part
but
is
you don't get rid of it just because other teams want it.
Then that's my other question is, what exactly do you think you're going to get for Davante Adams at this point on the trade market?
You're getting picks at best.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously.
Oh, what kind of picks?
Yeah,
you're getting like you hope to get like third or second rounders, maybe first rounders, but you're really getting third rounders.
I don't know if you're going to get a first rounder. The contract situation. He's owed $32 million next year. It's not guaranteed, so you're getting, you know, and I don't know that, you know, a whole lot of teams are interested in paying him 30 some odd million dollars at age 32. He's getting ready to be 31 years old right now. So you have to, as you know, and not even, it never even got to this point, but if it ever got to this point, the Raiders would have to ask themselves a question, you know, what's more valuable to us, having him on the team or a second or third round pick that, you know, is coming down the line, not right now. He means more to this team, to this organization right here, as opposed to whatever pick you might end up getting for him, which I don't think the days of him fetching a first-round pick because of the age and, you know, because of the contract situation, somebody's going to have to trade for him and then decide how they're going to handle the contract situation moving forward. So I don't know that the value is all that high, not because the player is not good. He still is very good. It's just that what's the future hold for him with his age and his contract situation. So you have to take that into account as well. So, again, I think that I don't know what Seth is necessarily focusing in on, but, you know, I just think that there's this national narrative that, you know, that the Raiders were itching to trade, like to say the failure of not trading, like they tried to trade him and they couldn't or didn't or whatever.
Right.
I don't think it was ever on the I know it wasn't ever on the table, not from the player, not from the team.
Here to the formation on the right. Austin Hooper is a fullback to the right of Josh Jacobs. They send Mayer in motion to the left. First and 10. O'Connell's going to pass. Settle. Taking a shot. Deep down the field for Adams. And he catches it at the 5 in stride. Walks in. Touchdown, Raiders!
Davante Adams, touchdown. Coming back here on Raider Nation Radio, Raiders Radio Network. Thanks for the call. Chris Thomas, former Super Bowl champion, will join us in a few minutes, top of the next hour. Getting some comments and reaction on the, how come there's no wide receiver cam? Why there's no wide receiver summit in the NFL? You got a pass rush summit, you got a tight ends university. What about the wide receivers? A.J. Brown sending a plea to his fellow wideouts. From the text line, 702-365-9200, Raider Dave in Denver says, can you imagine the complaining they would have trying to find a quarterback to throw to these guys? Here's another one. It would be cool. This is Zane from the 281. It'd be cool for wide receivers and DBs to be invited. The top, however, many top prospects for next year's draft could be added to this, maybe as DBs. Give those kids a taste, get some decent DBs on the field. Could be cool. Thank you, Zane and the 281. Yeah, that might be. That would be some interesting storylines, as long as nobody got hurt. But, I mean, could you imagine having, like, you know, young DBs against the, you know, the top wide receivers in the league, and you start building this storyline of, like, yeah, I got burned at that summit, but I'm going to make sure when the game's on, I'm going to make sure I put that away in my little bank of how I can beat you next time.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I just, like I said, it's just, you know, I'm just trying to picture the work that, you know, wide receivers would need to get to make that a valuable exercise by bringing a bunch of wide receivers together And you know, what would the work look like that would make it beneficial to them, and how high a level of a DB do you need? But, you know, again, you could do it so that it's a wide receiver and DB summit. However, you don't want to be giving away your secrets either.
You don't, right?
So they're great players. So kind of a rock in a hard place. I'm looking at the check this out, man. So the National League postseason picture right now. These are all the teams that are within 1.5 games of the wild card. The Reds, the Giants, the Mets, the Cubs, the Washington Nationals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Arizona Cardinals. Those are all the teams that are within a half a game to 1.5 games of a wild card spot. So it's interesting because I know my son was asking, what do I think the Mets are going to do at the trade deadline? Are they buyers or are they sellers? Well, if you're still alive, then why would you want to be a seller? And now with, you know, more teams in the playoffs and another wild card added, more and more teams are going to be in terms of, you know, the possibility of getting in the postseason. And history has shown that once you get in, anything can happen. You know, we're at a point now where to win the World Series, you just have to get hot. It's just and I have some problems with that, Clay. I think I liked it the other way where the best four teams were left standing, the two division winners, and that was it, you know. Or you do four, you know, just maybe make it just all the four, make it an even amount of division winners, forget the wild card, and because I think there should be something rewarded for winning your division. Because now anybody, look at any, like right now, you might have a situation where the Toronto Blue Jays, who aren't very good, sweep the New York Yankees just because they got hot in a series, right? That could happen in the playoffs easily.
No, it happens all the time. Remember right. When that crazy, that have that one game playoff, you know, when the early advent of the wild card, that was madness.
But then those teams ended up going to the World Series, the Philadelphia Phillies a few years ago, they fired their manager midway through, or not even midway through the season. And sort of snuck into the playoffs and then got hot. Teams in baseball, you can get hot. It's not always the best team; it's the team that gets the hottest at the right time. And I think to limit that a little bit, reward the teams that from beginning to end prove to be the best teams in their division.
How do you reward them though? Because they
don't add the wild card.
Don't add the wild card.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
Man, that's. That's rough, man, because there's so many markets there that feel like they have a shot, you know, and it keeps baseball really hot in the month of August and September.
They're never going to do it. I know that. And for the reason that you just said, because you want the summer gate, you want teams to believe that they're in it, which technically they are. I just named one.
I mean, when you bring up the Pirates, I get excited. Like, ooh, could the Pirates sniff the postseason, you know?
They're 36 and 38.
But tell your son, though, I mean, with the Mets, you know, they got those two young arms that are still possibly, you know, I know one, Christian Scott's, you know, he can make an entrance here. So you may have a starting pitcher there that could be really, really strong coming out of the minors. Christian Scott and Brandon Sproat as a guy that they feel really strong on could be.
And Senga.
Yeah,
who's been hurt. You know, he's going to come back at some point. So certainly.
I'm just saying because they're hitting so well.
Yeah, they are.
You wouldn't want to add too many hitters, but. Think about the pitching that you have, youngins that can come up throwing in the high 90s towards the end of the year. That's unstoppable.
Yeah, it's just and here's the other part of it. The way you reward technically your division winners is by giving them a bye, which I think actually hurts. It doesn't help you not playing. Baseball is a game.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, it is hurting.
Yeah,
the first round bye is not helping many teams at all in baseball.
You get it's just too long of a break and. You lose your edge, and in baseball, it really is kind of an edge. It's more about actually playing than not playing. Yeah, you can rest. That sounds great on its surface, but it gets you out of sync, and we've seen that where teams just lose that edge. Whether it's the Dodgers or there's other teams that factor into that. So I don't know. I don't know that more teams in the playoffs. Is a great thing, and I think it sort of cheapens the regular season, and it doesn't give the team that went wire to wire or battled through and proved over 162 games that they were the best team in their divisions. I don't know how you solve it because I know that baseball wants to make money and playoff games drive up TV ratings. And like we were talking about, you know, teams like the Cincinnati Reds are setting themselves up for a nice summer because they're in it. Their fans are going to be looking at the standings, not necessarily the record, and saying they're only a game out of the playoffs.
Right.
Now.
I mean, they're right
we
there
get
in
hot,
it.
Yeah, we can be a team that gets to the playoffs.
All right. After this, it's Chris Thomas here in the third hour.